Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
On the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a bank of the beast in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Gad, what are the Long Box guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid and a special guest. And we'll get to him in just a second. But first, Mike, rolling blackouts in California, fire, death, the apocalypse. What are you drinking, buddy?
I'm drinking a Widmer Brothers Brewing Hefeweizen. It's very tasty.
Oh, good. Is it cold?
Mm-hmm.
That means your power didn't go out yet. Excellent.
I have not lost power. I did smell smoke, but I closed the windows and chose to ignore it.
That's probably for the best. Josh, how you doing? What are you drinking there, pal?
I'm doing all right, and I'm having a delicious brown ale from my favorite brewery, Treehouse, called Bear.
Bear.
You got to say it like that, otherwise, you know, it's Bear.
You're just half-assing it if you're not saying it like that.
Yeah, you're pretty much coasting through life.
Speaking of coasting through life, LT, it looks like your screen froze up again, but are you there, buddy? Great talking to you there, LT. Let's get to our special guest for just a quick moment. Seth from the very popular podcast Gamer Needs Food Badly. How are you doing and what are you drinking, sir?
Doing all right with a nice bottle of water right next to me. Keeping it simple, keeping it easy.
Now, I have seen you drink lamp oil, but usually when you come on this podcast, you don't drink alcohol. What is up with that?
Just don't. Typically, I'm just going off work, I guess. I just don't drink that much alcohol, man. I do at times, but just not often.
Well, that's fine. I'm not trying to drag you into my dark, 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 dark world. Speaking of a dark, 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 dark world, we're talking this week, and the reason we have our good friend Seth with us is because we're going over the Joker movie. So what we're going to do is give a real brief history of the Joker, because going over all the Joker history is a podcast and a video and a Venn diagram and a dream cloud. Too much to go through. Mikey, you're one of our better historians here. You want to give us a brief history, and I mean brief history of the Joker?
Sure. He first appeared in Batman number one back in 1940, created by Bill Finger, Bob Kane, and Jerry Robinson. Fun Alex fact, Jerry Robinson based the original concept on an actor.
I know. The Man Who Laughed?
Yes, for the 1928 movie, The Man Who Laughs. That is a Fun Alex fact. And then he also produced a playing card, and then he was like, yeah, I'm just going to combine these two. So the Joker has been Batman's first supervillain and probably his greatest supervillain. He has had allegiances with the Injustice Society, Legion of Doom, ton of other groups. He is also one of the few villains who's carried his own series for a little while.
I wanted to ask, I remember reading somewhere that they actually were planning to like kill him off in the original appearance of Joker, and then they decided to never mind, keep him around, and he ended up becoming the biggest villain for Batman. Was it true? I mean, I just remember reading something about it.
Well, most of the time, they just killed off the villain at the end of the story anyways, but they decided to keep it going. Batman had originally appeared in Detective Comics before the Batman number one, so he had been established already. They get a lot of good feedback from the Joker, which is why they decided to reuse him. But over the years, they have no qualms with killing him because every time they do, he just comes back. Like, they'll put him in a death trap all the time, and he falls to his death, but they never find the body or whatever. So that's kind of been a trope that they've had for the last 70 years.
Like a god or something, and now there's three Jokers, and there's a bunch of mess with that.
Yes.
Yeah, when Batman was sitting on the, what was it called, the god chair?
Mobius chair.
the Mobius chair. He asked who the Joker was, and he didn't believe what he heard, and he doesn't really explain it to us. But one of the iterations of the Joker might be that he's a Native American trickster god who's been around forever, and that would explain the longevity of the character. But it's really hard to say, which is one of the reasons I like the Joker, because even the Joker doesn't understand his origin story.
Yeah, all of depending on what origin you get, he's got such a fractured psyche. Even the Martian Manhunter can't get into the Joker's brain with his telepathy because it's too screwed up. There's just no way of navigating through it.
I heard also in Clive Baker, he just did a Joker one-shot on that, I think so. And I believe they talked about how I think they had a bit in it where Joker was getting some psychiatric help or something, and the doctor there came to the realization that, you know, oh, you're not actually crazy. Like, you are sane or something like that. So, I don't know. I heard actually it was a pretty interesting book.
Was that Clive Baker or Clive Barker?
I don't know. I say words wrong all the time.
I'm just wondering because Clive Barker, I've heard of, a good horror writer.
He does the horror movies and stuff like that. Or at least he did the horror writer.
Yeah, Hellraiser.
Yeah, Hellraiser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's Barker.
He did the Joker book.
Okay, Barker.
Barker. Thank you for correcting me. I appreciate it.
No, correct me. I just want to make sure because I'd look it up.
Tom
would be horribly upset right now if you had corrected him on this fact, but that's okay.
That's why we're replacing Tom with Seth because Seth doesn't mind criticism. Yeah, that's right, Tom?
And I appreciate criticism. It helps me be smarter because I'm pretty dumb.
See, Tom, how did
this get to be about me?
It's all
for fuck's sake.
It's probably the moment you made it about you.
I just asked for to make sure. And then I apologized, you cocksuckers.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Seth brings games with him. You offer us nothing.
Yes, right.
By the way, I didn't even notice we lost LT again.
Oh, yeah. Anybody? We lost LT 10 minutes ago.
Okay. LT's doing his own podcast.
There were three people up here. I just figured everything was going fine, Seth. You automatically replaced LT.
I guess I'm just like, oh, wait, there he is.
Hey, LT.
All right, I'm on a different computer now.
Yeah, didn't miss you at all. No offense. Sorry.
Josh, I literally just noticed that you were gone. So, LT, we've been talking about the Joker, and we're talking about some of the comic series. Do you have a favorite comic series that the Joker has appeared in, or a favorite issue or graphic novel that you could recommend?
I mean, it's hard. I mean, the Joker is such a great character.
So no, right? Is that what you're saying?
I like Joker's laugh a decent amount, just because he thought he was dying, so he went on a massive rampage, and I thought that was a really interesting take on the character.
As one does, it's required when you think you're dying is to go on a rampage. That's just science.
It is.
You bet your bottom dollar, dude. I know what? I'm dying. I am stealing a Navy jet, and I am causing havoc all over the place.
So I think the problem with the Joker is he even though he had his own series in the 1970s, those are horrible comics. If you go ahead and want to read any of them, good luck with that. It's just trash. He is much better as the villain to Batman in Batman stories. So if you want to read good Joker stories, you actually have to read a good Batman story where the Joker is the villain. And I'm going to recommend, if you want to check out some stuff, go obviously check out Arkham Asylum with Grant Morrison, where this is the perfect way to go about it, because the guy who – I can't remember who the artist was, but it's all drawn in a messed up manner to make you feel like you're going insane while you're reading it. And Batman is fighting his way through Arkham Asylum trying to get to the Joker. And it is outstanding. The shit that he does to Dr. Destiny, Batman, you're a mean, mean person. That's all I'm going to say about that. Have you guys – has anybody read Arkham Asylum other than me?
Yeah, I believe I have. Is that the one that they based the video game off of as well? It was – what is it? Grant Morrison, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I read that one. It is a kind of a bizarre read. And didn't they make him kind of – I remember they had the book I read, there was a bit in the back where he talked a bit about how he made Joker, and he kind of made him a bit I would say – I don't want to say feminine. That's not really – I don't know if that's really right. But he kind of like would like kind of make Batman uncomfortable because he said he wrote Batman as somebody who was maybe sexually repressed. So Joker would call Batman sweetie, honey, and he'd even make a joke about hitting him on the ass or something like that. And it was like Joker's way of making Batman uncomfortable in his own skin or something. And he wrote him that way in that book.
I think we can all say that Joker's probably gender fluid.
Yeah, I'd be game with that. Yeah. I tell you, one book I just read recently was Death in the Family, and that is a very bizarre take on Joker. That where he sells nuclear weapons to terrorists, and then he gets diplomatic immunity.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yes. So, if you want to see a crazy take on Joker, you can read that book.
Oh, that's the only good thing about it is he gets to beat Jason Todd with a crowbar.
And he does seem to take pleasure in that.
Yeah.
Of course, we have already done a whole thing on The Killing Joke. So, if you want to go check out that podcast, you should. Just beware, it's an Alan Moore story, so there's a sexual assault. Well, an implied sexual assault. There's not an actual sexual assault in it. But I would recommend, if you want a really good Ed Brubaker noir kind of story, check out The Batman, The Man Who Laughs. It's a flashback to Batman's first encounter with the Joker, and it's told from Batman and Commissioner Gordon's points of view, which is really good. And also, The Dark Knight Returns, The Last Crusade by Frank Miller and Brian Azzarello is a great Joker story. And if you want just a one-shot, I love The Time to Monkey Shine by Andy Kubert. And it's actually not really a Joker story. It's Jack and Apes, his pet gorilla.
That's the only reason why you like it.
It's just such a beautiful story. And if you want the best Joker story that lasts a while, that's not just a graphic novel, check out The War of Jokes and Riddles. But that, again, it's not because I love the Joker. It's because I love Kite Man. And he is one of the central figures of The War of Jokes and Riddles. Anybody else have any other recommendations?
I do have to agree with you that in my mind's eye, I love the Joker comic book, and I knew this was coming up, so I got a bunch of them on one of the websites, and I started reading them again, and they are shit. Those things did not hold up. When I was a kid, I kind of liked the Joker being kind of this crazy, I'm a villain, but also, hey, that guy's robbing a bank. I wanted to rob, so I'll stop this robbery. And that's what like half of the stories were. There is one thing issue, I can't remember what issue, maybe issue 6, where he's brought before a judge, and the judge is reading off his sentence. He's going to put him in for life, and he picks a peanut up from behind his back, flicks it over his shoulder, behind the judge, bounces it off the wall into the judge's cup. The judge drinks a big swig of water and instantly dies because he has a severe peanut allergy. And someone's like, how'd you know the judge was allergic to peanuts? And the Joker was like, how the fuck should I have known the judge is allergic to peanuts? It's just a shot. It's a long shot, but it worked.
Yeah, it's some terrible shit. You're right, though. Like, one episode, it's him and his gang robbing a bank, and then the Royal Flush Gang shows up. So now he has to rob the Royal Flush Gang to get his stuff. It's just weird stuff. Like, he falls in love with Black Canary and kidnaps her. She's apparently unable to do any kind of karate moves whatsoever.
The great part about that is she was in her secret identity working at the flower shop, and he bought flowers for her, gives her the flowers, and she doesn't want to kick his ass because she's worried that her secret identity will get blown. So she knows that Ollie knows that she got kidnapped, so she's like, fuck it, I'll wait for the Green Arrow. And the entire comic book, she's just waiting for the Green Arrow to save her and getting madder and madder that she's going to have to do it herself and blow her secret identity.
Yeah, it's a bunch of shit. Yeah.
That was
that one is actually kind of funny, it sounds like.
It sounds a lot better than it actually is.
Yeah, that's always the case.
A better writer would have really worked with that. Like, her just getting more and more angry that she's going to have to do this. Like, at one point, she had to retie herself up. It's like, he didn't even tie me up right, for fuck's sake. It could have been better.
Yeah.
But going to the movie now.
Which is a perfect segue.
Perfect segue.
It could have been better.
But it could have been better.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Yeah. So I'll take the intro on this one because I've got something to say about it. So The Joker is a 2019 film written and directed by Todd Phillips, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Robert De Niro and Zazie Betts. Now, Todd Phillips, if you're wondering, who got the call to write a Joker film and direct it? And it would be the writer and director of such films as The Hangover, The Hangover Part 2, Due Date, Road Trip, Beer Pong, Starsky and Hutch, and Old School. Now, this is the guy, for some reason, took the call and the mantle of the Joker and put him on screen.
I can imagine how that pitch meeting went. Hey, excuse me, you did The Hangover. Could you do a dark Joker movie? Yeah, I could totally do that.
I could totally do that.
Have you ever seen Taxi Driver? Yeah. Have you ever seen The King of Comedy? Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to do those.
Yeah. just take that.
Just going to make that.
How will people know that it's actually based on Taxi Driver?
I'll put Robert De Niro in it. In the film.
Absolutely.
Wait, how will they know it's based on The King of Comedy? Glad you asked. I'm going to put Robert De Niro in it. Josh, why do you look so nonplussed from that?
Because it was the same.
You teleported.
It was right the same in. Joke. That's a callback. It was good. That's classic comedy.
Hey, you know what? I'm just going to say it. Raging Bull. It's a movie with Robert De Niro in it.
By having De Niro in the film, it was easier to ask him questions about the movies that they were trying to mix in with it.
True.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Bobby, how would you shoot this one? First off, don't call me Bobby.
How is this shot in those films that are very much like the movie we're making now?
Wow, you guys are just going to shit all over it. I mean, I was going to shit all over it, but I wasn't expecting people to help me shit all over it. Let's talk. Wow. I listened to Seth's podcast, and Seth, tell everybody again what your podcasts are.
Oh, I've got Who's Next podcast, and on there we do one episode of movies and comics, another episode of games. So we covered the Joker movie on our movies and comics episode.
And I loved your take on the Joker. So could you talk about your take on the Joker?
Yeah, no, I really did like the movie. I do understand a lot of the criticism, though, because like I did watch Taxi Driver, and I also watched The King of Comedy, and it does take a lot from there. But I do think that I think it had a lot to say. One of my favorite scenes on it was the talk show scene. I thought the movie was an interesting way in today's time and where we're so quick to point out somebody who does something wrong and ridicule them or put them out there or just say whatever we say about them without knowing their side of the story. And I thought the talk show was an interesting way of us getting to see Joker's side of the story the whole way through and then see somebody who is that voice talking down to him like he's just a disgusting person. And he is. There are problems that he has. I don't feel like I walked away sympathetic for him in this movie, although I just thought like that talk show scene just kind of hit me in a way that I thought was pretty interesting. And I thought that, intentionally or not, I thought it was kind of an interesting take on just that kind of conversation of today. Now, why is it said in 1981 instead of today's time? I don't know. Or 1978. I've heard so many different time periods for this movie. I think just for the aesthetic feel of it, which it looks great. The cinematography of it is pretty excellent. But I thought it was interesting. I enjoyed it.
I like the look and feel. Here's my problem with the scene in it at the end with De Niro on the stage. I felt that it was an audience bailout. Like, hey, if you haven't understood the movie up until this point, I'm about to explain it in one quick split. And here we go from start to finish. I don't know. I kind of thought that scene was the least elegant part of the movie. And I wasn't a big fan of the whole thing from start to finish, but it was okay. And the other thing I really wanted to see, or the direction I thought they could have gone in that would have made me feel better about everything that happened, was that if Fleck, Joaquin Phoenix's character, wasn't actually the Joker, but just the trigger for the creation of the Joker.
I think he still can be. I still think that that's possible, because we did see, which I actually called, I predicted on my podcast, we were going to see the Waynes die in this movie, and I was right.
Yeah.
And so he is like 12 when he is clearly like 40. Potentially speaking, he still can be the inspiration for another Joker. It doesn't necessarily mean that he is the Joker. Like,
true.
Joker. So
I wanted to see that. That's what I wanted to see in the film, though.
I do like that they kept it multiple choice, basically, because I think that was one of the – I think it was the Killing Joke. I think we talked about it in our podcast. Maybe I'm wrong about the comic, where he says that his backstory is multiple choice, and I feel like this movie kept it that way. Because to be honest, not really sure if the whole thing's a hallucination, if certain parts of it are hallucinations. Because once we saw that he thought he was dating Zazie Beetz, and that was not the case, you know, like everything kind of can unfold from there. So, but that also did something that you talked about with the scene where it didn't need to explain, oh, you know, she was never really there. I think they could
every scene. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like there were some parts of it that they felt like they had to dumb it down. So I guess that's why, just in case somebody didn't understand that he, thought about that. But,
yeah.
And to your point on the talk show, I think, though, I see your point that it kind of reiterates the whole movie at that one point, but I think it also gives an argument that needed to be had in that movie. But I think it would have been more interesting if Robert De Niro wasn't so much talking down, if he was actually having a legitimate other side of the conversation. But for me, I didn't mind the talking down, because I took it, I think, a little different way. I didn't really take it as a reiterating the whole plot. But I understand what you're saying.
Let me just say that some people need a plot like this to be laid out for them. My wife called me up after watching the Joker movie in London and said, "Tom, I'm so confused. Could you please explain this movie to me?" And my answer to that was, "Yeah, spend an amount of time and you were someone else." She just does not understand ambiguity in a movie line, and she needed it all, parsed out. She goes, "I think the girlfriend wasn't really even his girlfriend," which is explained to the audience. Now, my wife is brilliant. She has a PhD in computer science. She's not stupid. She just doesn't get when they're trying to be subtle in movies like this. So I understand that some audience members just need this extra alliteration just laid out for them so that it's, they don't have to guess anymore.
So I think the main problem that I had is it's told from Arthur Fleck's point of view, and it's an unreliable narrative because he's so mentally fractured. So we can't actually determine if anything actually really happened. Now, we know that Zazie Beetz wasn't dating him because, they explicitly go through that. But we don't know what actually happened or not happened because, again, it's being told from his point of view. I mean, he desperately believes that Bruce Wayne's father, Thomas Wayne, is his father, despite all evidence to the contrary. But again, we don't know if anything that he thinks, oh, well, that's the proof that I need, is actually really there, right? When he kills those guys on the subway, we don't know if there was actually that woman there that was getting French fries flicked at her or not. We don't know if they were actually, going to assault that woman or not. And we don't even know if they did anything to him to cause him to shoot. He could have just been imagining that he was being attacked and then pulled out the gun and shot. That's the brilliance I think they were trying to go with is, hey, this is possibly what happened. This may be his origin story, but we don't know because he's crazy. And the problem is, because he's so crazy, we don't know if anything we're watching is true. And so there's no point in watching the movie, in my point of view.
I enjoyed the film, but to me, this wasn't really a Joker film, because when I think of the Joker, I think of not only insane, but I think of brilliant. And I don't see Fleck as being brilliant. I don't see as Fleck as being someone who can come up with the Joker gas and coming up with a brilliant and yet totally insane way of delivering it. So I hope that there's that this is just an inspiration for the Joker, because this, in my mind, is not the Joker.
Although they do have a lot of beats in it that harken back to the Joker's different Joker origin stories that he's had, you know, being the failed stand-up comic, etc. However, there were some Easter eggs for real good comic watchers. One of the first things that the first sidekick that the Joker had was a midget named Gaggy. And when I saw him kill the guy in his apartment and Gaggy, and you know, the midget was there, I was like, oh, is he going to make him his sidekick and force him to be his sidekick? and that didn't happen. I was really disappointed, but
but it was nice.
That was a great scene, right? When the little person couldn't reach the lock, and yes, you weren't sure what's going to happen next. Is the Joker going to be cool and unlock the door, or like when you see that guy's shoulders slump when he realizes I am trapped in here. Yeah. I am not going anywhere with this dead body and this maniac. His whole body changes and gets even smaller than he was before, and it's brilliant acting. And you know, I really love that scene. That was a great scene for me.
And Mike, I agree, like the unreliable narrative does have a pretty big impact on the film. And what I hope, and I'm not sure, of course, because it's an unreliable narrative, is that there are silver nails, right? There are things that we hope are true because it's the only way to view the movie. I don't know if that's what they intended, but I do hold the subway scene as a silver nail, right? As a narrative that must be true to make the movie worthwhile. It's the same thing with that scene where the midget is let go, and the scene on the stage on studio with Robert De Niro. If those scenes aren't true, you are absolutely correct. This movie basically has no value. And I really hope that that's what they were trying to get across and that I could find myself agreeing with.
I think that the subway scene is true because he was still on his meds during that time period. My personal opinion is everything after he gets off the meds is kind of fair game. I personally think that all that stuff happened up into I think most of the movie, I think, happened, in my opinion, other than the Zazzy Beetz thing, because that's what we were told specifically. It's the only thing the movie tells us specifically. So for me, I'm going to take everything at face value, because I feel like if it wasn't the case, the movie would take time to tell us. Also, I want to say there were screenshots in parts of the movie that showed, like, TV screens, people on TV talking about what happened on that talk show. So that's outside of his perspective, meaning that that had to happen. If memory serves, I could be wrong. I watched this a couple weeks ago. So I would take a lot of that to have happened personally. That's just my take. I took it more as him. And like as far as like a purpose for the movie, I felt there was a purpose for the movie. As a comic book fan, I guess you're right. Like seeing the origin of the Joker and everything didn't really happen, but honestly, I think that would have made people upset. I think they went with the best way is keeping it multiple choice, keeping it to be, you know, whatever it is. And I think it was talked a lot about mental health. I really enjoyed his the take of him laughing and everything being what he thought was an illness. I kind of question if it really was an illness, that if it's just that's what he found funny. Because after a while, he accepts it, and he stops hurting from the laughter because he just revels in it. Like, he enjoys it. He's just laughing. And so that you know, the small progression forward into him becoming the Joker, I thought was great. I do agree about him not being smart enough to do the Joker bombs and do all that stuff. But then again, we're also talking about the movie universe here, like, more grounded takes is sometimes what they try to do. Him running around with laughing gas and things like that is probably not in a grounded, realistic, you know, narrative. So I wouldn't expect to see it regardless if he was smart or not. I don't think Heath Ledger's Joker did much with that as far as the fantastical elements of it. He definitely was a smart, like, tactician. Then that was Heath Ledger. But I don't know if we saw a lot with, like, chemical bombs and gas and things like that. We just saw him, like, strategize very well in taking down Batman. So, I mean, if this Joker here is just a spread of insanity, like, you know, I mean, I would be interested to see another go. I think even it's reported that Joaquin Phoenix was open to do another movie. So we might actually see another him reprise the Joker role in something. But I don't know if I really see that existing in from what I'm hearing about in the Batman movie that's coming. So I don't know if that Joker goes there.
So, Seth, on your podcast, you had a very interesting take. What it boils down to is, what is the purpose of the movie? What is it trying to talk about? And you had mentioned that it's an indictment of the mental health system, but it's also an indictment of our gun culture. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I actually did. For me, I felt like it was actually an anti-gun statement because if you notice, everything that happens with the Joker happens as soon as he gets a revolver in his hand. And everybody that he kills, other than his mother, which is a personal kill, is with that gun. Only because that gun was given to him by someone outside of any type of system of control or anything like that. And that empowered him into becoming this more powerful being. And it speaks on the dangers of the gun, the dangers of guns as a whole. And, like, honestly, I think this was really a speak against violence than for it and glorifying it. And I think it was really there to paint the horrors of it. And that's something that I had picked up on with that, because, like, it does start when he gets the gun. And I think that's something that I've even heard on different podcasts and other people talk about, you know, military people and stuff. Like, when you have a gun, it does give you a sense of, like, feeling. Like, I think even one of the guys on my podcast, he grew up in a pretty, you know, kind of a hood area, and, you know, he had a gun. And he talked about, like, walking around and feeling, like, powerful, like, kind of feeling stronger, like, because you have that gun, it changes the way you view the world, because, you know, you can now control or demand what happens with it. And you give that to him, and, like, he realizes that when he kills those guys in the subway, and that's why he starts dancing, because he starts feeling himself. And that's the slow progression of that twisted little dance that I felt like he was enjoying it. Like, he was just like, that's him becoming that. So I don't know. I took that too as just that, because I did notice he does not use any other way to kill anybody really other than the gun, from what I remember. Well, the big guy, I think he did stab him in the neck up close, but a lot of it is with the gun, and it all begins when he has that gun. In fact, hell, he even, because he brings the gun to the kids show, is how he loses his job and everything. Like, a lot of it is just the problems with gun and the way that guns are out in the street and the way that people who are mentally ill are getting a hold of these weapons and the things that they're doing. So I think it has some big things to say.
And I will say that when the other clown first hands him the gun and the bullets in the bag, he says, "I'm not supposed to have this." Because he already knows, no, I'm mentally ill. I'm not supposed to have that. But it does lead to his empowerment which is something that he never had before. He never had any kind of power over anything that was going on in his life.
And it wasn't just self-defense, because it was self-defense for the two, but that third guy, he executed. Yeah. And I think it was him feeling the power of that gun.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the concept of the simple death of the power of being, you know, sort of obfuscating yourself from the violence you're doing, and how much easier that is with a gun compared to other things, right, is very evident. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, and then he progresses in the movie where he takes it upon himself to do violence in other means. But yeah, I definitely see that parallel. And it's super timely, right? How we view mental illness in the country and gun control, and how, I mean, just how blatantly obvious it is, and how blatantly it's simple it is to get a firearm in this country is ridiculous.
And at work, you know?
Yeah. Crazy.
So, did you guys like the movie or not? Because I recognize that it's a very well-made movie. It's just not the movie for me. It was exactly what I expected from the previews. It's just not – it wasn't going to be my cup of tea, and I was right. When after I saw it, I was like, yeah, this is just not the movie that I wanted.
Yeah, I didn't like it as a Joker movie. If they had called the movie The Clown, removed the Waynes – and sort of circled the wagons around mental illness, I think I would have liked the movie more, honestly, if they had just taken it away from DC Comics entirely. I think I could have seen and read what they were going for more so than what they ended up with. But I thought it was okay. If you're a DC fan and you're a big Joker fan, I would say be wary of what this film is for you. If you're not a comic book fan, I would say go see it. It's a movie about violence and mental illness and how society treats people who should be treated better. But as a whole aesthetic, I was disappointed.
I mean, I thought it was a well-crafted film. I enjoyed the film, but like I said before, it didn't feel like a Joker film to me. The main character I didn't really buy as the Joker. I thought Joaquin Phoenix did a fantastic job acting, but it just didn't seem like that character was the Joker.
I really like this movie because I've always thought the Joker is kind of one of our more open-ended villains. He is whoever you kind of think he is. His convoluted past lets you imagine what you think would have led him to this point. So this could be the Joker. This could be the real, actual Joker. I love a lot of the little bits of evidence they leave behind. One of the ones that I think is overlooked too much is after he kills his mother, he finds that picture, he takes it down, and on the back, "Love your face, WH," which could be, I'm sorry, H, yeah.
W, I mean, Thomas Wayne. It was supposed to
be. It could have been that, you know, his mother was right the entire time. Maybe he really was. But it's open-ended. It leaves it that way. I love that we talked about the King of Comedy. I think that was a huge influence on this movie, as was Taxi Driver, of course. Just terrific. I really enjoyed it. And I love the fact that now that stairwell in the Bronx has been renamed the Joker Stairwell. And people who actually use it to get around are pissed off that cosplayers are showing up and trying to close it off so that they can take their picture. And they're pushing people down the stairs to get them the fuck out of the way. These cosplayers don't realize that these are the exact people the Joker fucking hated.
Well, I enjoyed it. And one thing I'll say about, like, if you just call this movie The Clown, and you did this movie about mental health,
nobody would watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually using the DCIP for, like, you know, something that could be important, something that could be powerful. I mean, man, the talk around this movie was insane. And, like, you know, there's protesters in Japan right now. Oh, no, China right now, excuse me, for the Hong Kong protests that are putting Joker makeup on their face in protest. So, you know, give or take for what you got. I mean, it's had an effect on people. And, like, I'm glad that I can see a DC property that I like used for something. This the Hong Kong stuff has really hit the gaming industry in a way, just as well as it's hit, you know, the NBA and a number of other facets. So the news has kind of been coming in my direction a lot. And those people in Hong Kong, they just want the freedom and stuff instead of being taken into this more communistic, you know, mainland China, from my understanding of that's what they're protesting and doing about. So, I mean, if that's empowering them, a movie like this, and it wouldn't have done that without using the Joker's name, then, you know, I don't know. I'm on board with you taking and having fun and doing your own interpretation and spin on the Joker. I think it still had the spirit of Joker. I agree. It may not exactly be the Joker, but it was Joker enough for me.
So what I want to bring up some numbers. $657 million is what the Justice League made. $821 million is what Wonder Woman made. The Joker movie, which only cost $60 million to make, has so far made $853 million. It has done better than the Justice League. It's done better than Wonder Woman. So everybody hang on to your shorts, because you know there's going to be more low-budget R-rated movies coming out from DC Comics, because this is the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. It has surpassed Deadpool.
So you're saying we could very likely see the very, very dark origin story of Charles Brown, a.k.a. Kite Man.
Oh, I would fucking love it. Oh my God. DC, or excuse me, Warner Brothers, give me $50 million. It will only cost me $10 million to make, but give me $50 million and I will make you a Kite Man gritty origin story that will make people cry, wet themselves.
I'll do it for 11, but nobody wets themselves.
Yeah.
You'll wish you could fly. The Kite Man story.
Yeah. I think at some point, there has to be a character named Charlie Brown, and Kite Man has to be stuck on a tree. As long as those two things happen, I'm in.
Charles Brown is Kite Man's name.
Yes.
I know. Then it needs to be Charles Brown Sr. Because someone needs to be on the ground looking up into the Kite Man eating tree and Kite Man being stuck in there.
No, that would be a psychiatrist trying to get him down.
Fair enough.
I think the poster is just the tree.
Just the tree.
Fuck you if you don't get it. It's just the goddamn tree.
I will make a Condiment King movie for a mere $20 million. We will see.
I will make it for 21 if nobody, you know, wets their pants.
I think one of the
23 if I get to wet my pants.
One of the guys was telling me there's a rumor of a President Luther movie being talked about.
See, all right, so let's play this game. All right, everybody give me your pitch. What villain do you want? And we could let's limit it to Batman villains. And so what we could do is, at the end of there's five of us. At the end of it, we could have a movie Arkham Asylum where Batman has to fight his way through all of our interconnected stories.
I mean, in the darkest way possible, I think. You could make a movie, and I'm dead serious about this. Calendar Man would be a dark motherfucking
movie.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
He like, kills a lot. He's got a good body
kills
count.
A lot of people.
And it would be really easy to make a dark, gritty Calendar Man.
Yes, it would.
It would and, be so yeah. easy.
And you have that 1950s song playing in the background to make it even creepier. Yeah.
And my favorite part of the whole thing, right, is for me, Calendar Man comes down to lapels, right? He just has one lapel with the card and the date on it, and all we need to link it into a Joker movie is one flip to the Joker and a walk off screen, and you're done. And the whole thing just walks off screen right there. Calendar Man is a dangerous son bitch, and that would be one dark-ass movie that you could easily make on the Joker budget.
And I'm gonna top you because I'm gonna make it like Marvel, because you know Marvel has different genres that they play with. Like Captain America 2 was a spy movie; it wasn't really a superhero movie. I'm gonna make a rom-com about Mr. Freeze.
There you go.
Wow.
His wife, and will they, won't they get together? And then at the end, he's got a fucking freezer in order to make sure that she lives.
I've got one for you. The ventriloquist in Scarface.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yes.
Wow.
Very dark.
If we want to be good, you know, I just want to see a small puppet intimidate some hard gangster thugs
that
should be done in live action.
That would be awesome.
And if we just want to go crazy, like if we want to get fucking nuts on this podcast, let's get Jeff Dunham, right?
Oh, yeah. Natural. That's a natural fit.
Natural.
Yeah.
We do get to kill Jeff Dunham at the end of the movie, correct?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then Joke gets the ventriloquist dummy, and they're together now.
Yeah. And there's a showdown with One Ton, and someone's like, read a book! Because if you don't throw that in, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep, that's it.
LT, what do you got for us? Pitch us a movie.
All right. So let's take somebody that's already been on screen and done horribly, and let's remake him. King Tut as a Rambo-type mercenary coming back from the Middle East after he's just been raiding temples and dig sites, trying to pawn off all of the treasures that he's stolen.
Oh, no, I got it even better for King Tut. You make him a veteran who is just suffering from PTSD.
Messiah Complex.
Oh, yeah, that's actually better. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Messiah Complex. He raids one of those temples. He comes out with Messiah Complex.
Yeah. How about Professor Pig?
That's just a slasher flick. I got a better one for that. Okay. I'm going to go with the Mad Hatter. But we got to make it like just a super, super. Because he's always trying to find his Alice. And he's always disappointed in the girls who don't become his Alice. Oh. We can go through like 9 Alices in this movie.
Now, this movie's got to be like a mushroom trip. Like, you just took some and you're gone. It's got to be creepy. We got to get weird with it, with the Wonderland and everything. Yeah. Let's do that. That's right.
And the great thing is, at the end of all the movies, you just see Batman come in and punch him. And, like, that's the end scene for every movie.
Yeah,
they're just dancing around, woo-woo, and Batman walks in, punches him, and then cut to... Yeah, that's it. Mm. After all the credits, that's the end cap.
Right.
So DC Comics.
Make another Alice, a better Alice.
Mike, is there an after credit scene where Batman is just like in the Batcave drinking tea with Alfred going, what the fuck happened to the city?
No, we got to save that for later.
But this is how every movie ends. It just ends that way. Yeah, that's just the last scene.
DC Comics, if you're listening, we know you're not. You could hire the 5 of us, and we will create your universe, and it'll be
shit at us.
It'll be amazing, or it'll be something.
We got the BVCU done.
Yeah,
I'll send him a dummy from the ventriloquist with like a condom on his head, like Jared Leto, and just be like subtle hints.
Your ventriloquist dummy will have tattoos.
Yeah,
right. Have
gold teeth on them. Yeah. Yeah.
The ventriloquist dummy will be in the tattoo parlor getting a tattoo. That's when you first see him.
That should actually be the opening scene to the movie. Actually that scene with the ventriloquist dummy getting the tattoo, being initiated into a gang, and that's how the Batman movie opens.
Each one of these tattoos represents a different period of my life.
That's right.
Then when we cut to Arkham Asylum, we see that the ventriloquist doll has tattoos, tears underneath his eyes.
And then, I can't believe you had a wood burning kit here. Hey, you never know what's going to happen in this town, man.
That's it.
And I do Arkham Asylum told from the point of view of one guard who just is his daily schlep, like dealing with these guys all day long.
And do you know who that guard is, Mike?
Carl.
know, at some point through all the films, the guard, that character, the actor, would be seen through every film, and the last scene of the entire series is him just putting on Ambush Bug's mask.
And that guy, and that actor, Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk. Perfect.
It's Alan Tudyk.
Folks, we got to leave on that. That's the high note. We all agree on that, right?
Yeah, let's wrap,
wrap
it up.
This thing up.
Damn.
Thank you so much for listening. We're just going to go over plugs real quick. Pensacon is coming up. If you haven't got your tickets and you're not going to Pensacon, go to Pensacon. Don't be a douchebag. It's going to be terrific. Mikey, what do you got to plug?
Well, I would like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at KirbyCracklemusic.com.
All right, who'snextgaming.com. You can go over there, check out my podcast. Also, Movies So Bad They're Good. There's a Facebook group. You can join that one. They're always pretty friendly. They're always talking about terrible movies, movies that are so bad they're good. They do watch parties on there if you want to join up on that. Movies So Bad They're Good. And then the podcast, of course, we just covered Return of the Living Dead 3. That movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So, when are we going to be on to do our Hudson Hawk review? Because, man, I love that movie.
I'm never going to get you.
I love that movie.
For sure. For sure. We'll do that one. I think we have the next one coming out is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. So that's actually the next one after. So go ahead. Check them out.
Well, you should also check us out at the Reno Pop Culture Fest Friday, November 8th at 12:30 p.m. in room A12. We're going to be doing our horrible, horrible, horrible stereotypes in comics panel.
Can't wait to see that one. That one's going to be a lot of fun. Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Tommy, sweet, sweet Tommy, anything else to add there?
It's like I got to get up and go to work tomorrow.
Yay.
Josh, Reno. I don't think you're going to be at that one, but is it usually your sector?
Reno is my sector and spirit. I wish I could be there, but I cannot.
I do love Reno. And our good friend Seth. Seth, any last words of wisdom? Any parting shots of wisdom for our audience?
This podcast is like the difference between Baker and Barker.
Bingo.
Baker and Barker.
How did you know my boss's name is Barker?
I know all things.
That's freaky, Seth.
And he works at a bakery.
And don't forget what I always say, guys. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you're going to love. You're going to live a lot longer. I love this movie, and I'm glad some of my friends did, too.
Fuck you, Tom.
Good night from the log bike, guys. Perfect outro.
Perfect.
That was a perfect outro. Nothing to see here. Not impeachable.
Absolutely.
I really did like the open-endedness of this movie. I mean, it could be, if you want that to be your Joker, that's your Joker. If you don't want that to be your Joker, it's not. But like I said, my wife didn't get any of this movie.
Yeah, as a side note, you know what's happening at the Decoro Bush Lodge, Tom? Two ducks.
What?
Two ducks. No, it's
still two ducks.
No, two ducks. Just rocking it out.
Decoro Bush Lodge. I was about to jump over.
My wife and my oldest daughter, they loved the movie. They were like, "Ah, oh, this movie's great." So, yeah, they were all for it.
I don't want anyone to get shot on those stairs, but I kind of want someone to get shot on those stairs for blocking them off and being a dick.
Yes, indeed.
Mm. I mean, these are the exact people the Joker, these self-entitled douchebags, are the exact people the Joker was railing against.
They're the ones that wear the "I want a relationship like Joker and Harley" t-shirts, right?
Yes, these guys. the people that just don't fucking get it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Really, you might have that relationship. Do you have a black eye? Are you feeling okay?
Man, so, I mean, if you dig it, I mean, I'm not going to judge you, but, you know, I hope you get.
You know what? I'll judge you. That's not S&M. That's just abuse. It's different.
There is a difference.
Yeah. I like There's getting no safe words. Yeah. I like getting burned with a cigarette. Yeah. You know?
That's normal.
Yeah. The normal stuff.
Hey, did you guys get emails to for your tickets for Reno?
Yes. Do you want it, Mike?
I need one of them for my daughter. If you could send it to me.
How's your daughter doing?
She's doing fine.
She enjoying California?
Yep. She has not had a seizure in the last couple of weeks, so it's been good.
That's terrific. Good to hear.
Yeah, it's definitely good to hear.
She went to, she finally got, so she's on Medicaid, and she went to, like, California has Cal-Aid or whatever it is, and she had to go to her doctor to get referred to a neurologist. So she goes to the neurologist, and she was in there for, she's like 10 minutes because she's got an implant that's supposed to control her seizures or help reduce the seizures. And the doctor looked at it and goes, well, I don't know shit about that. You need a specialist. She's like, I thought that's what you were. He's like, oh, no, you need a real specialist.
I'm a specialist.
Yeah. All right, Mike, see if you got that.
Yep, I did. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. What's next week's topic?
Did you guys want to do the X-Men or not?
I don't mind doing the House and Powers wrap-up.
LT?
I've not read any House and Powers.
Okay. Well, we can do something else.
Yeah. Seth, by the way, are you going to come over to PetsCon this year?
No.
Come on, man. It's just a drive for you, motherfucker.
How far away is it from here?
Where are you?
Mike, you've done that.
4 hours?
It's 4 hours.
Yeah. 4 hour! That's less time than I spend at a Chinese buffet if it's all you can eat.
Yeah. Well, we about to get it. We about to get smashed for Christmas. I got 3 kids, man. Christmas about to break me.
Daddy, you know what? That's a great, great reason. Not even an excuse. That's a reason, my friend.
And my oldest is 17 now, so she's like trying to get a car. And we're looking at.
Motherfucker, you look 17 to me.
Well,
old are you?
31.
All right, I'm doing the math, and you're a monster.
I'm
glad someone said it.
I adopted her.
Oh, then
so now you feel like
you're
shit.
Saying I'm a dick.
You're a dick.
Yeah, you're a dick.
Yeah.
So. How about we do Maura McTaggart? That way we could do the House of Power wrap up, but also cover her history.
I like Moira.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lock and Key episode was pretty good. I listened to that earlier today.
It's perfect for your Halloween viewing. Yeah,
definitely. I actually read some of the first book, but I didn't get too far into it, and after hearing y'all talk about it, I was like, fuck, man, I need to go back and read that, because y'all really got me very interested in it. I like horror stuff, so.
You got a Comixology, by any chance?
Had it. I don't have it right now, because I've got my Game Pass going. It's kind of a give or take, and Game Pass is kind of winning right now, but I'll probably kick it back up again. I need to, because Comixology has so much good stuff, and I would just be reading and reading and reading, because, I mean, you get so much for it. And I know y'all said, I think the first couple books are on Comixology right now. Not the whole series. I think you said it's 6 books, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm definitely going to give it a read. I'm a Stephen King fan. I read a lot of his stuff through middle school and high school. I used to read a lot of his books. So his son doing that is interesting. I like to read what he's got going on.
Well, you know, LT will download the PDF and send it to you.
Oh, there you go.
See? Look how I just threw you right under the bus, LT.
It's true. It's all true.
Yeah, it's all true.
You got to send me your email address.
Sure, man. Who's next? gmail.com. I'll shoot you a link or something.
Okay.
Yeah, because I got the first
send,
four.
Send Lucky Bastard a link.
All right, cool. I got you. I definitely will.
All right.
No problem.
Okay.
But thanks for having me on, man. I'm about to get on out of here. I appreciate the offer. I'm glad to do an episode with you guys.
Thanks a lot, Seth.
Yeah, good to see you, Seth.
Yeah, no problem. Good to see you. I'll take it.
Bye.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
So Josh, you know, you got a, I already told him.
Package.
Yeah. I already told him, Tom.
Oh, you told him what it is?
Nope.
No. Just said there's a package coming and I have to put a bow on it and wait till Christmas. Side note, it's a super close up at the duck. I don't know why.
Super close up of the duck.
Hey baby, I have the, I put on our last podcast the clip of you telling me that you were right and we were wrong.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have the audio enough for her telling me to stop fucking pandering to her. Because that didn't come through on the microphone. Because otherwise that would have been hilarious. Yeah.
It would have been.
Would have been. All right.
All right.
I'm going to go to bed. Man. All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right, guys.
All right, night, guys.
Bye-bye. Good night, guys. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Doc!
Doc.
Really? Really? Ellen DeGeneres' laundress? Really?